Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
It's hard to tell what the state of the pro-life movement is. In a lot of ways, there are some very strong signs. We've come off the March for Life in Washington, D.C., record numbers there. Young people are attracted to the pro-life movement because many of them consider themselves survivors of the abortion holocaust. At the same time, legislatively, we have seen in New York and Virginia attempts to expand abortion up until natural birth. And it's not a foregone conclusion that the Supreme Court has permanently changed against ideas like Roe v. Wade, although the Supreme Court may be making some significant decisions about curtailing abortion nationwide in the near future. What is the state of the pro-life movement? Recently at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, Dr. Ryan Anderson made a statement about our current kind of moment in time under the Trump administration. He said, with regard to issues like life, this is a pause, not a rewind. What did he mean by that? Joining us to talk about the state of the pro-life movement, Scott Klusendorf. He's a regular guest and president of Life Training Institute. He's author of the book, The Case for Life, and a recent column titled, All We Did Was Survive, The State of the Pro-Life Movement Under President Trump. Scott, welcome back.
Good to be with you today, Todd.
Your response, if you would, to the recent legislative moves or attempted moves in the case of Virginia to extend abortion to the moment of natural birth?
Well, first of all, realize that under Roe v. Wade and Doe versus Bolton and then later Casey, there's really nothing that's changed here legally. What has changed is all of a sudden the public is aware of just how radical this is. And that's why you're seeing the outcry not only among pro-lifers, but among people who might describe themselves as, quote, moderate pro-choicers, unquote. The New York bill, of course, allows abortion even while in the process of being born. The Virginia one, had it passed, thankfully it was shot down in committee, but had it passed, would have allowed a baby that survived an abortion to be left to die unattended if that's what the parents wanted. So the ethic in play here would have been, if you're wanted, your life has value, but if you're not, it has none. And all you need to do to see how bad this is to think that the homeless are unwanted, but that hardly justifies killing them. So we've just seen two very radical bills that have exposed the pro-abortion lobby for what it is.
In addition to that, what do you make of this kind of all-out attempt to at least legislatively approve of abortion, and in the case of Virginia, infanticide, blatantly infanticide, not that abortion isn't infanticide itself. What do you make of that legislative strategy? I'm just thinking about Governor Cuomo's justification for the New York bill was that we are likely to have another pro-life justice on the Supreme Court in the next 2 years.
Well, I think he's right. Now, do keep in mind that many states already have written abortion rights into their state constitution. So reversing Roe is not going to make abortion illegal in the U.S. The day after Roe is reversed, abortion remains legal through all 50 states until individual legislatures in those states that haven't codified it in their state constitutions act. I think the governor is precisely right. They are very concerned that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is not going to survive the next 2 years, and they are trying to preempt the fight on the Judicial Committee over approving another justice who might be a strict constitutionalist who says, look, there isn't a right to an abortion in the Constitution, and we're not going to pretend that anymore. So that's what they're gearing up for.
Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation spoke last fall at our Making the Case conference, and he said something very interesting. He said that President Trump's election allowed us to set the pause button, not a rewind button, on issues like the protection of the unborn. What do you think?
Oh, he's absolutely correct. Listen, an escape is not a victory. I've written an article where I liken President Trump's election to more like Dunkirk than Normandy. We escaped. We were spared devastating losses. I mean, if you go back to 2016, in the state of California, pro-life pregnancy centers were being forced to refer for abortion or face crippling fines. You had doctors being pressured to refer for abortion or get out of their profession. You had other situations where the abortion lobby was enforcing its license with tyrannical rigor, and that would have only gotten worse under a Clinton presidency, and we were spared that. But it doesn't follow that the culture is embracing a pro-life ethic. It means we were spared. So I agree with him completely.
How would you then, in light of all of that, characterize the pro-life movement at this particular moment in American history?
The good news is that we have hit the pause button, or if you will, we escaped Dunkirk. The good news is that the judicial nominations are looking better. We are in the process of reforming the courts. That's good. It's also better that there's been some protections for religious liberty and conscience clause legislation that gives medical professionals the ability to opt out of things they find ethically disturbing. All that's good news. But, Todd, when we look at what's going on in Washington, where there seems to be some help coming our way, limited, but some help, and then we compare what's been going on in our churches, where Christian students have not been receiving pro-life apologetics training, where a vast majority will never hear a reasoned case for the pro-life view, and those are the very students predisposed to accept our view if they ever hear it. When you look at that landscape, you think, how are we going to win this fight when millions of Christians predisposed to accept our view will never be exposed to pro-life teaching because the gatekeepers who oversee their learning, pastors, school principals, educators, are not making an effort for pro-life training. In fact, in many cases, any thought of a pro-life presentation is dead on arrival in their minds.
You mentioned Democratic National Committee Chairman Tom Perez and statements he's made over the last year or so with respect to how welcome pro-life sentiments are in that political party. Why do you mention that?
Well, I mention it because I think we need to just be honest here. The Democrat Party is dedicated to the proposition that an entire class of human beings can be set aside to be killed. That is their position, and they have demonstrated it beyond all doubt in the last 2 weeks. Anybody who thinks that's not what they're about is living in a dream world. But here's the thing. Perez thinks that churches are brainwashing Christians to be against the pro-choice worldview. And he thinks that they're elevating abortion above all other issues. And that is simply not the case. If you take a look at Christian conferences, for example, take conferences like Passion, like Urbana, any of the big Christian conferences, you will find sessions, both breakout sessions and main stage sessions, on sex trafficking, global warming, slavery, care for the environment, care for the poor, all of which, fine, I think Christians should discuss these things, but there's no passion whatsoever to discuss the intentional killing of 61 million innocent human beings in this nation since 1973. So Perez is living in a dream world. Then if you look at what happens in churches, I speak at Summit Ministries, and I teach the pro-life apologetics stuff there. And Summit Ministries, for any of your listeners that may not know, it's a Christian worldview conference where high school kids are trained to think biblically before heading off to college. Well, I've run an informal survey over the last few years. It's informal. I ask for a show of hands. How many of you, prior to coming to Summit, have ever been exposed to a pro-life apologetics presentation in your churches or church youth group that equipped you to make a defense for the pro-life view with friends who don't hold the pro-life view? And the numbers, Todd, are abysmal. Out of 1,800 students a summer, only a fraction have heard anything to pro-life apologetics training. We're not going to win when that's the case. So when Perez says churches are brainwashing people to think abortion is the most important thing, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
So what are the challenges to pro-life teaching? You said that they exist. What are the challenges there?
I think the first thing is that gatekeepers fear that if they talk on this issue, people are going to get angry. Well, that's a given. Listen, if you preach a true gospel, people are going to get angry. People don't want to hear about the law of God, the wrath of God. They only want to hear about the love and acceptance of God. If you tell the truth about abortion, people are going to get angry, especially when you consider that millions of Americans have participated in abortion. But we can give pro-life presentations that do not unduly offend people. We can give pro-life presentations that convey biblical truth, but also convey the grace of Christ that's found for those who put their faith in him. So it's not a choice we have to make between, oh, well, do we go ahead and talk about an issue that will offend everybody or just be silent? No, there's a third alternative. We can actually speak with conviction on this issue, but do so within the context of the gospel and reach and heal a lot of people.
You say that credentials aren't the problem, messaging isn't the problem, speaking fees in the case of your organization are not the problem. What do you mean?
What I mean is if you look at who we target for our pro-life presentations, namely Christian high schools, Catholic and Protestant, we offer them for free in many cases because we know the schools don't have money. We also have a talented team of speakers. A lot of our speakers have graduate degrees in Christian apologetics. We are trained. We've been featured on major media. But people still don't want to have us, and it's because of the subject matter we're addressing, abortion. It's taboo, and they're afraid of the pushback they'll get, so they don't want to have a speaker who's going to address that issue.
What is it that, as you say, those who ignore pro-life training efforts, pro-life teaching, don't want to see?
What they don't want to see is what abortion is, and they don't want to see how it impacts people who engage in it. It's an unpopular topic because the event organizers know, take a school for example, even in a Christian school, there are faculty who've had experience with abortion. There are kids having sex outside of the covenant of marriage, and the results of that often lead to abortion. And this is not something that's totally outside the group we're trying to reach. It's something inside, and as a result, there's resistance to it. But the answer to all those things, Todd, is not to avoid talking about abortion. The answer is to expose it within the context of the gospel and then point people to the only one who can heal their sin, that being Jesus.
Scott Klusendorf is our guest. He is president of Life Training Institute. When we come back, he'll have a realistic picture painted of the reactions he gets when he presents the case for life to those groups of young people. Stay tuned. You can call it what you like. I call it life. I call it life. I prayed for things nobody.
Give your spouse the gift of time for Valentine's Day with a gift certificate from The Cleaning Authority. Call toll-free 1-866-827-0062 or visit thecleaningauthority.com. Forget the flowers, candy, and jewelry this year with a Valentine's Day gift certificate from our favorite cleaning service, The Cleaning Authority, 866-827-0062 or thecleaningauthority.com.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start.
the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the state of the pro-life movement. Scott Klusendorf, president of Life Training Institute, author of the book The Case for Life and of a recent column titled All We Did Was Survive, The State of the Pro-Life Movement Under President Trump, is our guest. Scott, you were talking earlier about the opportunities that you have to speak to groups of young people and make the case for life. Paint a realistic picture there of the reactions that you get.
Number one reaction we get is, thank you. We've never heard anybody give a reasoned case for this. We've heard people shout conclusions that abortion is wrong. We've heard people cite catechism, tell us the Bible is against abortion, but nobody has made a case for why the pro-life position is true and reasonable to believe, and we're grateful you did. That's the number one reaction we get everywhere we go.
Do you see minds changed in those cases when they get that kind of a presentation about the truth of abortion, the truth about the unborn?
We see minds change two ways. Number one, there are students who will immediately after the presentation tell us, you know what, you made me rethink this. I'm not going to tell you it's everyone in the room who says that. That's simply not the case. But we get a sizable number who come up to us and say, you made me rethink this. The more persuasive thing to me is to read the follow-up surveys we do when we ask the schools afterward, hey, how did it go? So maybe a week, 2 weeks later, we send an email to the school, tell us in detail, how did it go? What was the response? And we get these unbelievable responses from faculty saying, wow, we're really glad we did this. Our students can't stop talking about it. It's been the talk of the school, and we've seen changed lives. So we see it at the immediate point of the message contact, but we more importantly see it later when the message has time to settle.
We've discussed the whole life ethic before. You need to explain what that is, but you recount an instance where a speaker talked about pro-lifers having to rewrite their job descriptions, and you say this leads, in essence, to views that are functionally pro-choice, not pro-life.
Yeah, it was really sad. I was speaking at an Evangelicals for Life conference, and they had a speaker there, a pastor no less, who argued that pro-lifers had to rewrite what they're doing and become whole life. If they really wanted to be pro-life, they can't just be against abortion. They have to be for life, womb to the tomb. Sounds great, right? Well, he then went on to say that if you don't embrace womb to the tomb, you're not really pro-life. You're just against abortion. Well, this speaker, unbeknownst to the listeners, is a pro-choice pastor who believes it should be legal to intentionally dismember innocent human beings in the womb. And here he is lecturing pro-lifers that they're not doing their job because they're too focused on abortion. He doesn't believe womb to the tomb. He doesn't think children in the womb deserve protection. He opposes abortion personally. He'd like to see it rare, but he doesn't want to protect unborn children legally. Now, Todd, to think about how crazy this is, imagine telling a society, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to make it illegal to lynch blacks. We're just going to work to make it rare. And we're going to leave it legal to lynch them because we don't want to be against choice. It's too expensive to enforce a law that would protect blacks. So we'll just try to reduce the incidence of lynching, but we're not going to make it illegal. I mean, that would be beyond mind-boggling. And yet that's exactly what this pastor believes. And he was lecturing abortion opponents at a pro-life evangelical conference, telling them they're not truly pro-life.
What else is wrong with that whole life argument? If you are going to be pro-life, you have to be X, Y, and Z as well.
Well, the big reason is it's just logically stupid, and I'll use that word without apology. I mean, imagine saying to a Christian ministry that was running an after-school daycare program in the inner city to help poor mothers, imagine saying to them, why are you only open from 3 to 5 p.m. on school days? How come you don't operate 24/7? And, oh, while you're at it, what are you doing to correct gang violence in the city? And what are you doing to correct homelessness in the city? And what are you doing to make sure that high school kids have something to do? I mean, anybody that said that to that ministry would immediately be thought a complete fool. And yet pro-lifers are told this all the time. How does it follow, is my question, how does it follow that because we oppose the intentional killing of an innocent human being, we have to take responsibility for everything wrong with society? I mean, that's just insane. As a colleague of mine puts it, pro-lifers do not need additional causes. We need additional support. When we're dealing with a culture that is bent on killing innocent human beings, we are not wrong to focus on stopping that.
I cynically look at that whole life argument as a rather thinly veiled attempt to push the issue of abortion to either kind of hide it in the shuffle of other issues or to push it down on the priority list. And I have long subscribed to the sentiments of Richard John Neuhouse, a frequent guest on this program when he was alive, that the pro-life issue is of a different moral caliber, and it of necessity stands as the highest priority among the many priorities that Christians may have on these issues.
Yeah, he was exactly right. Listen, an issue like war could be contingently wrong, meaning there are cases where a war is unjustified, there are cases where it is justified. But abortion, the intentional killing of an innocent human being, is not a contingent wrong. It's an intrinsic wrong. It can never be justified. So you're exactly right, Todd. It's in a different category than other issues like war or capital punishment. And by the way, this whole idea that we need to be whole life is not new. It showed up 40 years ago. The Catholics tried it with this whole seamless garment approach to pro-life advocacy, and you are right. What it did is it diminished abortion, and it did another thing. It made pro-abortion politicians less repugnant to the public because they were able to stand up and say, you know what, we're the real pro-lifers here. We're only wrong on one pro-life issue, as you would see it, abortion. But we're pro-life on war, we're pro-life on pay raises, we're pro-life on the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, we're pro-life on anti-nuclear weapons, while you're only pro-life on one issue, abortion. So who's the real pro-lifer here? So when you equalize all these issues, when you make them morally equivalent in one big soup, that's what you get. But Neuhaus is right. Abortion is of a totally different category, and it should not be lumped in with these other issues.
With that said, I think what you were just describing there is that kind of strategy of the whole life movement was very clearly articulated by Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi recently when she characterized pro-lifers as, what did she say, they pray in church on Sunday morning, then they pray on other people for the rest of the week. And she kind of claimed the moral high ground by saying, meanwhile, we're doing the Lord's work protecting the environment. That was her case there. And they're doing nothing about it.
Exactly right. It's an ad hominem attack, an attempt to say, hey, we're the real virtue people here. You're not. You're only focused on one little thing. Hey, listen, if I'm in a society that thinks it's legal for men to beat their wives, and I decide that, you know what, that needs to stop, and I make that my sole focus, a politician who comes along and says, listen, I have a great health care plan, a great plan for the environment, a great plan for helping the poor succeed, but I'm going to leave it legal for men to beat their wives, that is a politician I'm going to oppose with everything in me. He does not become virtuous because he's good on other issues. Good deeds do not atone for bad ones.
How do you respond when someone says, and this usually comes from outside the pro-life movement or on the periphery, the people who are kind of ashamed of being pro-life, when they say that all this pro-life talk is just moral posturing, it's just virtue signaling?
Well, is it virtue signaling for Dietrich Bonhoeffer to say it's wrong to kill Jews and try to live out his Christian convictions by opposing Hitler? Why would they say that unless they know what we're doing? If we are making the proclamation that there is moral truth to be known on the issue of abortion, and we're making a case for our view with a well-reasoned argument, then to dismiss it as virtue signaling is not a refutation of our argument, it's a dismissal of our argument. And Todd, the pro-life argument is real clear. It's wrong to intentionally kill innocent human beings. Abortion does that, therefore it's wrong. Now, is it possible we're mistaken in our argument? Yes. But you've got to show we're mistaken. It's not enough to simply dismiss it by saying, oh, you're just virtue signaling.
Finally, then, what do you think is the greatest potential ally to the pro-life movement as it stands today that is yet to be fully tapped?
I think it's students. I think the constituency that we have not reached, that we need to reach, are students predisposed to accept our view. And that's why at LTI we focus at reaching students in high school and colleges, Christian colleges in particular, and Catholic and Protestant high schools, because we believe those students are predisposed to accept our view and will take the training we give them and reach others with it. And in an article I wrote recently for John Piper's ministry, Desiring God, I think I titled the article, All We Did Is Survive, I make the point that we are not going to win until we reach that constituency. Elections are won when you can mobilize large numbers of pro-life voters who can command the electoral landscape such that we can protect candidates who support us and punish those who don't. And we're never going to build those coalitions if we don't draw people into our movement who are already predisposed to accept what we'll teach. And we're sadly not reaching them.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute, author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You can purchase this book and read his recent column, All We Did Was Survive, The State of the Pro-Life Movement Under President Trump, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. Always good to be with you.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., the Church is remembering today Old Testament Patriarch Jacob. We'll do so with Dr. Tom Egger, Associate Professor of Old Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Then we'll talk about dowries, both ancient and modern, with Rebecca Curtis. Stay tuned.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.